You're listening to The Edge, everything bass fishing, coming to you worldwide from Megaware Keelguard Studios.
Hey, hey, Bass Edge Nation, how y'all doing? It's great to be back for the July 17 edition of Bass Edge Radio. Man, it has been a wild couple weeks. Man, not a whole lot of going on in the tournament world, but we're going to get to that here in just a little bit. Still lots of industry news and things coming out. Man, summer is in full gear. That's right, man. The heat in the south is jamming, to say the least. But also lots of fishing going on elsewhere in the country. It seems like some folks down the south taking a bit of a respite, especially on the tournament scene. But up north, man, it's obviously in full swing. And still in those mid-states, a lot of tournaments going on. But, man, quick shout out to Megaware Keelguard, obviously our primary sponsor here with Bass Edge Radio for many years. Keelguard providing boat owners protection from grinding salt, abrasive rocks, and concrete boat ramps. Be sure to see all their other additional products and accessories provided from Megaware through Keelguard.com. Man, if you like what you hear here on Bass Edge Radio, hopefully you enjoyed that last episode with Nick Hatfield, the MLF Invitational Champion there on the Potomac River. Please remember to subscribe on that YouTube, subscribe on those favorite streaming platforms so you'll never miss another episode of Bass Edge, released twice a month, obviously on the first and our mid-month edition, typically shout out on the 15th, but just a couple days later here because of a great ICAST show. Wanted to bring you all the new information so there wasn't a whole lot of tourneys going on in this first half of July, but obviously lots of great things happening from a manufacturer's world down at ICAST, retailers seeing some of those products for the first time, consumers, some of those products already available. We're going to get into that just a little bit, but man, I got to say, it's been kind of surprising the lack of events here in this first part of July. It's been a crazy busy time for me after that Champlain event that we talked about in the last episode and obviously Jordan Lee winning that Major League Fishing Bass Pro Tour event up there on St. Clair. Things have been super quiet, but rocking had some trips going on up at the Thousand Islands in northern New York around that July 4th weekend. Look, that fishery is absolutely off the chain. If you haven't been there yet or haven't had a chance, man, it seems like an average smallmouth fishing day up there is 20 pounds. Just an average day. A good day of smallmouth fishing up there, you're going to have your best five for somewhere between 22 and 24 pounds. And if you're really on them, catching them pretty good, 25 plus up to 30 pound bags of smallmouth. Saw an event up there over that July 4th weekend. 32 pounds of smallies won that tournament. So pretty freaking wild what's going on up there at the St. Lawrence. But I got to say, tons of boat traffic up there too. It was amazing. It seemed like there was a tournament going on every day. All the boats launching up there. So folks, taking advantage. If you haven't yet, please get up there. It's a lot of fun. Also had my youth camp there, July 5 through 9th on Oneida Lake. Man, that was a great time. Kids catching a lot of fish. Man, shout out to all the instructors that came out and helped. It was just a great cast of instructors that we had up there for those youth anglers. And man, Oneida Lake putting out some hammer smallmouth. Had smallmouth in the 4.5 to close to 5 pound range. Not something you typically see on this post-spawn time frame with smallmouth up there in that part of the country, you know. And it was also amazing to me coming from Thousand Islands south to Oneida. Not too far a drive, just an hour and a half or so. But, man, the difference in a lot of those smallmouth that first week of July still spawning up there on Thousand Islands. But, full summer patterns going on down there at Oneida. But let's break into this iCast show. I just got home from iCast. I attended, obviously, with Reigns and Hayabusa. We launched a few new products. The Hayabusa side, we launched the quarter ounce Little Schmitty swim jig. The Little Schmitty swim jig is signature bait from Brian Schmidt over there in Maryland, who's a stalwart on tidal water fisheries. The Potomac River does really, really well also down in Florida. Actually, Nick Hatfield attributed part of his victory to that swim jig over there in the invitational event. So that was super cool. And, you know, rocking through the quarter ounce Little Schmitty swim jig, we've got the 3/8 and half ounce. So be sure to check that out. But that quarter ounce is going to give you some more presentation, some more availability through that process. Great plastics through iCast coming through on the Reigns side. We had the bubbling crawl. You know, the bubbling shaker is a huge product for Reigns. Big smallmouth killer. A lot of guys like to use it up north, but now introducing the bubbling crawl. Kind of takes that action that the bubbling shaker gives you, puts it in a crawl platform. So interesting to see. And maybe one of the biggest show outs of iCast on the plastic side, outside of mid strolling, we're going to get in that a little bit. But gravity baits, what I like to call gravity baits, those are those big, heavy plastic baits. If you go back to February Bass Edge episode, we talked to Kenta Kimura, talked a lot about these gravity baits, how to use them. Reigns launched a bait called the Tank. Yamamoto launched a bait earlier this year, kind of in that same category, the Yamatanuki. Missile Baits launched a gravity bait at iCast, as well as Spro. So this technique really starting to take shape and take form with a lot of different manufacturers getting involved. A couple other quick highlights. St. Croix enters the market. Longtime rod manufacturer, now making reels. I would say that was probably the biggest surprise for me at iCast, seeing those St. Croix reels coming into play. Berkeley swim baits, glide baits, the Nessie seemed like a neat glide bait that's coming out. Spro swim baits, the Megalodon, and you know, the Megalodon, you know, similar to the Mag Draft a little bit, you know, it had that magnet that held the treble hook, but now they've got a screw-in magnet with this bait from Spro, so you can either use it or not use it. But Bass Mafia, saw Chris Zaldane down there. He's launching the top of the line, a single hook line through swim bait, kind of a neat product. You know, some folks mentioned that this was the first time they've seen a line through on top of a swim bait. I've worked with Optimum Baits for a long, long time. They had a top of the line swim bait launched probably 6 or 7 years ago, but it was on a treble hook. This really enables you to fish grass, fish vegetation really well. So the hook on top of the swim bait, I really like the way Chris designed this with Bass Mafia, a single hook, really nice. You could add a treble if you want as a stinger. They didn't really mention that a whole lot, but really what that does is that single hook's going to be able to separate from that swim bait, you know, allow those fish to throw that bait a little bit less, but also allow you to change the hook, which is big, because you never know what's going to happen with, you know, you catch a lot of fish on it, your plastic's still good. You don't have to buy a whole new bait. You just replace the hook and you're good to go. So I thought that was pretty cool. Trolling motors. We saw in 2019, big trolling motor splash. We heard about the Move earlier. They really launched that at the Bassmaster Classic from Power Pole, the Move trolling motor, but that was on full display there at iCast. One of the new ones out now, you got the Minn Kota Ultrex, the Quest. Everybody now going brushless on the trolling motors. Gotta say, Minn Kota, congrats on getting there, but it's about time. But anyway, with the Garmin Force, they launched a new deal, the Kraken, so a new trolling motor there. Seemed like more for big boats. I think that's why they didn't get, you know, a big pre-iCast hype out of that, and they really didn't push it that way. You know, it was just something they pushed there, but things from in the industry, talk at iCast, the techniques that are really going to start making a big push, the mid-strolling, you're going to start seeing some more hooks. Obviously, Rapala released the Crush City line of plastics. I think the Freeloader, the most, you know, that's going to be your mid-strolling bait there. There's a flipping bait there, a swim bait there as well. But I feel like in overall, the coolest product from that group was the VMC Ned Swing Head. And that was, I thought that was probably one of the most innovative hook pieces that I saw at ICAST, you know, with the swing head, like you would see with a football jig, you know, the swinging hook hooked to the head of the bait and the hook separated essentially by a split ring so that you could get more action in those plastics. So that was cool to see. But again, some of those big topics, mid-strolling, free rig, still a little topic, the G-Crack booth, out of control, that thing is going on fire, lots of retailers really interested in that. Basically, overall, I'm going to give the grade of ICAST slightly underwhelming, not a whole lot of super innovative products, but I think some important additions for manufacturers that had holes in their product line, where anglers that were brand loyal had to go to other brands to get some of those techniques accomplished. Now you saw some fill-in from a lot of these manufacturers, and you know, kind of neat stuff, but not anything real innovative. But it was still fun to see all the new products, all the people. I'll say I think attendance was a down a little bit from a retailer's perspective, maybe due to a little tough industry push early in the year, specifically like December, January, February, March. I think a lot of folks in the industry were wondering where we were really headed. But since then, feel like the sales have been on fire. Anglers been out, you know, catching fish, buying bait, seeing what's new. So that's been a really, really great to see. What's going to be great to see is we've got an angler here ready to join us. The MLF BBT Pro, Adrian Avina, is going to be with us on this episode. Y'all stay tuned. We're going to be right back with Adrian. We're going to talk a little bit about Cayuga. We're going to talk about St. Clair. We're going to talk about summer smallmouth bassin. It should be a ton of fun. Don't go away. When we return after this message, we're going to be with Adrian Avina.
You know the importance of protecting your investments, so choose the protection the pros pick. Grinding sand, abrasive rocks, and concrete ramps are no match for our patented technology. The MegaWare Keel Guard is made tough and made to stick. Install it yourself in less than an hour, providing the most dependable, most trusted protection for your boat, guaranteed for life. Insist on the original Keel Guard the pros have picked for 25 years. MegaWare Keel Guard. A rush of tournament adrenaline. Nitro, the choice of champions, where performance meets play. Nitro, a big water beast, a pure fishing machine. Nitro, release the champion within.
Hey, here we go. Back with Bass Edge Radio. Man, I'm excited to bring this angler on board. You can see we're out here at the cabin in Pennsylvania. Bass Edge is on the road. We've been running around for several weeks, but here we go, man. Your Bass Pro Tour MLF champion from Cayuga Lake, Adrian Avina, on the line. Adrian, I think you might be on mute. Double check that real quick. I see a little cursor right there. But see if you're on me. There you go. Now we got you. Adrian, welcome to the show, my friend.
Kurt, man, it's been a while, dude. I'm excited to be on here, excited to talk some fishing. Unfortunately, I'm sitting in my truck right now because it's pouring rain in here in New Jersey. But good time for the show.
Absolutely, man. Great time to catch up. I know you do some saltwater fishing out there. You've been off a couple weeks. Have you been able to hit the salt while you've had a few moments off from the schedule?
Yeah, man. I mean, honestly, so, you know, as soon as I get home, I'm busy with the charter business. You know, we've been doing this for about 12 years now. We got two boats in our fleet and we're jam packed. I mean, I've got eight tuna trips in a row.
Wow.
The last couple of days we had to cancel due to weather, but tomorrow's going to be our first day we're going to be back on the water, so I'm looking forward to it.
Outstanding, man. Well, it's great to have you back here on Bass Edge. We're going to be talking mostly bassing today. I know, although saltwater is a big portion of your life there. Man, it's been since episode 184, dude, back in May 2014 that we saw you last here on Bass Edge. So super happy we could make this happen. Can't believe it, dude, 9 years ago.
Unbelievable. Dude, that's incredible, man. I mean, time flies, that's for sure. But I'm glad to be back on here because that means I did something good.
We're going to talk about that, man. Your victory last month there on the Bass Pro Tour at Lake Cayuga. Man, it's taken a little bit for you to kind of have this moment, you know, this kind of, you've had a lot of solid finishes, made a lot of championships, but now, dude, you got the W. If you broke down 9 years in between, last time we talked, you were fishing the FLW Tour and having some great success there, kind of had the whole Jersey Boar marketing thing going. I know you still do that through your saltwater guide service there, but man, what has been the culmination to get this check mark off your list with the big W there on Cayuga Lake?
Man, I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm going to speak for a lot of guys who haven't won because, I mean, my win just came a month ago, right? So there comes a point in your bass fishing career for all the guys who haven't won where you start doubting yourself. I'm not going to lie. I mean, you start realizing, man, and you start looking around you like, man, there's a good angler that hasn't won a tournament. And, oh, man, there's another good angler that hasn't won a tournament. Man, there's a guy who's made a 30-year-long career that hasn't won a tournament. So, like, you really don't know when it's going to come, but yet you have a lot of positive people that are surrounded you. You have a lot of family. You have a lot of sponsor support. So you have a lot of people that are driving you and, like, saying, like, man, when it's your time, it's your time. But, like, when they're saying that, like, 5, 6, 7, 8 years in a row, you're like, well, gosh dang, is this thing going to happen or what, you know? So I'm telling you, it feels really good, you know, to finally seal the deal. I mean, I travel with a group of guys that flat out just smash them, you know, and to watch them hoist trophy after trophy, you know, it was getting to me a little bit, but I mean, it definitely felt good that it was my time, and you know, I mean, I had a couple of the best smallmouth fishing days I've ever had in my life, and I just so happened, you know, during a tournament, and I was able to win. So it's,
yeah,
cool,
man. Well, it was fun to watch. I think you're right. You know, a lot of people don't take in perspective. You got 80 pros just on the Bass Pro Tour. You got, you know, 8 or 9 chances a year. That's, you know, 10% of the field can win per year. You roll it through 10 years, dude. I mean, that doesn't mean you're going to win 100%. Obviously, that would be that you have 80 shots to win, that maybe if it rolled around evenly for everybody. But we all know that's not life and that's not the way it works. So it was great to see you finally kind of get that win and make it happen, and really in wild fashion, man. This was a really neat tournament to watch. A lot of interesting dynamics from, you know, just an MLF rules perspective, guys going out and finding giant smallies on bed, Cayuga Lake just showing out like nobody's business. I mean, the weights were absolutely redonkulous, but let's break this down before we get into, you know, some patterns, how those fish behave from, you know, smallies, particularly from spawn to midsummer patterns. I'd like to nip that stigma of the MLF, you know, kind of the rules platform, how that played out in your victory in Cayuga. Basically, lots of folks chatting about, you know, how that catch and release format, you know, effectively produced an odd situation there at Cayuga with smallmouth on beds and that situation that, you know, a fish that returned to bed so quickly and are really protective in that situation. But how did that, you know, evolve throughout the event for you? And just kind of want to give you an opportunity to address if you think there'll be changes in the future with MLF and this, you know, ideal of this catch and release format, which I think is great conservation. I mean, can you imagine all of these fish being caught in a catch way format? So let's chat about that real quick and how that evolved throughout the week for you.
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, and this goes way back with you, Kurt, man. I remember a tournament back when I first started bass fishing, and I believe it was an open or something like that. And I think we were up on Lake Erie, and I remember you having a really good tournament. But me, just naturally, you know, being a Northeast guy, I really love catching smallmouth. I'm not saying I'm an expert by any means, but it's something that I probably have more experience than most of the field. And I know how dangerous it can be when smallmouth are spawning. And, you know, I've been using a flogger for like 10 or 12 years now. So I definitely feel like I had a leg up on the most of the field, you know, going into the event. However, I personally never caught a spawning bass on Cayuga. So I really didn't know what was going to happen, what was going to transpire. And I really didn't get dialed in until the tournament, you know, and as the tournament progressed, that's when I started to get more and more dialed in. But for me, you know, I didn't catch a whole lot of fish in practice. I committed to the sight fishing game with the exceptions of maybe a couple hours. But the conditions weren't conducive for sight fishing. I feel like that's what really, you know, in hindsight, actually played into my favor just because I was comfortable, you know, using a flogger out there deep. And I just knew it was all about cover and water. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie. You know, that format definitely made things a little bit deceiving. I still think I would have destroyed them, you know, but maybe I wouldn't have caught, you know, 105 pounds of smallmouth over 4 days. You know, maybe I would have caught 95 or 100, but I still would have smashed. I definitely still would have smashed.
Yeah. You know, I was up on St. Lawrence, basically the week after that. You guys were already on St. Clair at this time, and they were just wildly spawning up there at that time. And it seems like that time of year, you see a quality of fish in a fishery that you really kind of think exists. We saw it a little bit last year at Cayuga when Connell took the victory. You had Ebert just, you know, I think he caught a 7 and change there. We kind of saw a glimpse of what that fishery could provide, but really that spawning cycle, I think you see it at St. Lawrence, Cayuga, you see it at Oneida, you see it at Champlain. Although Champlain, I think the weights get a little bit better actually after the spawn, but these fisheries, you see this class of fish more regularly in the spawn than you do in the post-spawn and mid-summer time frame. Tell me, what's your thought process on why that occurs and kind of the growth from you as an angler to kind of understand that and feel like once you started seeing them on beds, you had to follow that through to crack big bags every day on that fishery of Cayuga?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and you hit it right on the head, man. Like, when it comes down to fisheries, and it doesn't matter if you're in Florida, if you're in Texas, if you're in upstate New York, it doesn't matter where you're at. But a prime example, right? You know, you go down to Florida, say you go to Okeechobee or you go to Toho, and you go around the spawn. Now, I'm not saying you're going to catch them 8 to 10 pounders that are up there cruising around or that are paired up with them little males, but at least you see them. Yeah. You know, the difference between the largemouth and the smallmouth are super aggressive, you know, and if you get a smallmouth shallow, now it can be on a bed or it can be up there roaming on a flat, you know, more than likely you're going to catch that bass. So this is a very small window that these giant fish just come up shallow and they make them really susceptible to be caught. But when it came down to strategy for this tournament, the way our format is and the way it's set up, we're not bringing fish back to the scales. So I knew going into it, there was an outside chance that the tournament can be won off of 5 bass. And now I'm not talking about 5 bass for one day. I'm talking about 5 bass for the whole week. Sure. And I knew that, you know, and I mean, so with knowing that, soon as I found my first 5 pounder, it was like, okay, I checked that bass off my list. Now all of a sudden, now I'm like, okay, now I need to find 4 more. And then I find a 6 pounder, and I'm like, oh shoot, now I need to only find 3 more. Then you find another 6 pounder, you're like, well shoot, you might win this tournament if you find 2 more 6 pounders. So yeah. For me, it was literally going into this tournament trying to find five of the biggest bass that I could find, and knowing if they stayed for the whole week, I was going to be in a really good position. But if they left, you know, of course, you know that now, you know, you're going down the list. Another one, exactly. So, and that did happen to me. You know, I found about 10 bass that I thought were 5 3/4 plus. You know, so 5 3/4, I think the biggest one I found was probably really close to 7. There were some 7+ pounders caught in a tournament. I personally didn't find any of them, but, you know, so after really finding those big ones, which I didn't find them until like, it was like the second or third day of competition.
Okay.
You know, finally the conditions got right. It got flat. The one thing about Cayuga is it has a lot of like sandy banks. And it's not like, yeah, there are some bluffs and yeah, there are some riprap, and they definitely played in our tournament. But them sandy banks is where I was finding them fish that were real far off the bank. Well, if you get 15 or 20 mile an hour wind blowing into a sandy bank, you know what's going to happen.
It's going to get dark.
You're just not going to be able to see. So really for me, once them conditions got calm, I was able to get on them sandier stretches and get further off the bank. And that's when I was able to find a couple of the key fish that really, really got me, you know, to them giant bags.
Man, that's the game, right? You play the strategy, you find the fish, you work the strategy, you work the fish, you win the tournament. And that's the game with every bass fishing event. Do you feel like after all the talk post the event, not only from outsiders and really, you know, forget that stuff, but internally, between you anglers with MLF, that's the cool thing about the Bass Pro Tours. You guys have a lot of input or at least some substantial input, not all the input, but do you feel like that's something that'll change in the past, that, man, you guys hit this body of water in this scenario and it could cause some changes for the future, or do you feel like it's just a strategy of this format of fishing?
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit earlier on about, you know, going to St. Lawrence River and it being set up really similar. So, you know, we got a small taste of that. Now I don't know if it was last 2 years ago when Jacob won on the St. Lawrence River and they're spawning everywhere, but in that particular tournament, it was catch as many as you could.
This is
really the first time we had a 5-fish limit tournament during a smallmouth spawn, which, you know, I mean, it sets up to be a little bit funny, right? So I do think Major League Fishing, you know, after having this event, really understanding how susceptible a smallmouth is to biting on a bed, I do think we are going to, you know, schedule our events around, you know, not being on the spawn. And there was a rule change, you know, right after the event to basically cut out the gray area, because, you know, there were some anglers that, you know, could have possibly caught the same bass more than one time in that day, which, you know, per the rule, That was not wrong, but it was a gray area, and no longer can you do that. So they did. They tried making some steps in the right direction, and it's going to be one of them things. It's a growing pain type deal. We never got put in this situation, or Major League Fishing hasn't. So they made the changes, and you know, moving forward, you're not allowed to target the same bass more than once per day.
Gotcha. So that's great to know, for the fans to know, for the fans to understand, for the anglers to know that, you know, there's progression. You know, Major League Fishing hasn't been around 25 years. The format hasn't been around 25 years. So you're going to go through these situations where you find these circumstances. It's great to see MLF, Bass Pro Tour, the anglers, you know, set this up so it continues to be an evolution of a new element of our sport, which I think is very, very exciting. So fun to see, and great information there. Thanks for sharing that to the fans, man. That's awesome. Going back to the smallmouth, you mentioned now, you know, I think we as anglers knew, at least, you know, guys that kind of have a grip on the smallmouth world, how protective they are and how you can catch them maybe, you know, more than one time off of the bed, whereas largemouth, not quite as ferocious, right? Yeah. Not quite as ferocious. But let me ask you this question. You know, it seems, you know, obviously smallmouth stay on a bed longer, more susceptible to bed fishing than largemouth. Why do you feel that is? Do you think it's just a biological thing for smallmouth? I've seen something new this year because I started flogging a lot more, which I've never seen before, and that was fry inside a smallmouth bed that actually just stay there after the eggs hatch. So maybe that's a reason smallmouth stay a little bit longer. Have you seen this, or what's your experience overall with why smallmouth stay where they're bedding for such a long period and they're so defensive?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great answer for you, Kurt, honestly, man. Okay. But I do know that I've seen smallmouth, you know, a particular smallmouth spawn for 25 days, which is unbelievable. You know, you talk about Florida, you get a little cold front, they leave overnight.
So right.
Smallmouth are not like that. But I mean, you got to kind of remember what a smallmouth is, right? I mean, a smallmouth is a really aggressive bass. And I don't know how much experience you have, you know, catching spotted bass on bed, but spotted bass are also another really aggressive bass. And it's also another bass that I think you can catch multiple times in a day. Now, of course, every bass is different, but
spots to me seem crazy smart on a bed. Whereas, you know, smallmouth, not as much, you know, just because they're so ferocious. Largemouth, you know, you can catch one in a time or two, and you got to work them, kind of have a little strategy if it's male. Dude, spotted bass to me, dude, I think they're the smartest fish on a bed. What's your thought on that?
I mean, you're like,
nah, they're dumb.
I mean, straight up, I'm not gonna lie. Me personally, I think the sequence goes. I think it's smallmouth. They're stupid, right? And then I feel like you go to spot, then you go to a largemouth. I feel like the biggest issue with spotted bass that people don't take into consideration is that their mouths are so small.
Yes.
So like, I've actually worked a bass multiple times, right? In different scenarios, different lakes, different parts of the country, thinking that it's a largemouth, and I'm like, man, this sucker here is so freaking smart. I can't catch him. He's nipping at me. And finally I catch him and it's a big spot. And I'm like, well, no crap. I'm freaking, you know, flipping a full size Texas rig and he's got a mouth this big. So then I start really downsizing them on my baits. And I feel like as soon as you do that with spotted bass, they become really susceptible to being caught. And
that's a great tip.
I do feel like largemouth are the trickiest. Now, you know as well as I do, we're talking about the vast majority of these bass. There are certain scenarios where they'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, I've seen a smallmouth I hadn't been able to catch. Yeah. I've had the same thing happen with the spotted bass largemouth scenario where I think it's a largemouth you described that to a T, and that's kind of where I broke it down to where, man, I think they were a little bit smarter, but maybe my deal is I need to downsize.
If you downsize, that's the deal. For anybody watching this right now, you put on something small and spots eat.
Very cool. Great tip. All right, man, you're winning Cayuga. You went to St. Clair. Had a great, you know, a good tournament there, made the knockout round. You're currently seventh angler of the year. Tough, going to be tough to jump seven spots. I think there's four anglers right now that are within 10 points.
Yep.
Probably one of those four have a really good chance at the AOI. Your Red Crest qualification basically complete for 2024. What are your goals going up to Saginaw Bay, event seven? You still got, you know, 3 weeks, essentially. It starts August 1st. How do you challenge yourself to make a run at a second Bass Pro Tour trophy of the season?
I mean, I think straight up it's, and I know you said you wanted to touch on like summer smallmouth too, a little bit. So
yeah, we will.
We're going to start diving into that a little bit right now. All right.
Absolutely.
So, Major League Fishing, and I'm going to vent a little bit because I'm not too happy about it. So, Major League Fishing, we're going, for you guys that don't know, we're going to Saginaw Bay. That's going to be our final stop at the Bass Pro Tour. Saginaw Bay is a big, giant bay off of Lake Huron. Well, we're talking about a bay that's, you know, 20 miles wide by 40 miles long. So this sucker's bigger than more than, you know, most of the lakes.
Right.
Well, our off limits point is literally going through the Charity Islands. So for anybody that doesn't know what the Charity Islands are, it's basically the furthest most islands going into Lake Huron. So naturally, right, if I'm a smallmouth and it's a summertime, my goal is to move out towards the lake, right? That's where the coolest water is going to be. That's where the most current's going to be. You know, that's where it's going to be deeper. Like, that's my goal as a smallmouth. Well, we can't fish a lot of that stuff. Okay, there's a lot of islands. There's a lot of underwater shoals that is literally like 2-3 miles past our cutoff point.
So now, a lot of great structure, not available to fish.
Not available. And like, and Kurt, you're a phenomenal smallmouth fisherman. Like, you know, some of the biggest schools of smallmouth are going to get on the furthest out stuff. So if you literally have a shoal, you know, the furthest out from the point, or, you know, way out there in the middle of the lake, you know, that's where in the summertime, that's going to be where they want to be. That's going to be where they're going to be comfortable. Well, in our situation, there's going to be a lot of really productive water that I feel like the big schools of smallmouth are going to be, and it's not going to be inside fishable water. So that's the curveball, right? Because if it wasn't for that, this tournament would get one on smallmouth. Me personally, I'm still going to be hard headed, and I'm literally going to commit to smallmouth. I don't care if it's 8-footers out there. And I feel like that's what it's going to take to win. However, because
you think
of
there's
that,
a chance greenbacks come in this event, then
I honestly do. And the only reason why I'm saying that is because of where the off limit line is.
Interesting.
That off limits line was 3 more miles out towards Lake Huron. I'd say no chance in heck it'd be won by small large. But in this situation, I do think there is a chance.
Wow, that's gonna throw a little wrinkle into it. It's not gonna make it tough for you, which maybe that makes you in a great position. It sounds like you're all in, brown backs or nothing. And but man, those top four anglers that are within 10 points are gonna have a lot to think about. I'd love to be in their position, but it's gonna be a little tense.
Yo, I mean, there's no doubt, and I mean, with a guy like Jacob, you know, and second in points, and I mean, you got Matt Becker, you have Alton Jones Jr. I mean, you've got literally, you know, 3 or 4 of the hottest guys right now in bass fishing, and those guys are phenomenal smallmouth fishermen.
Yeah.
So these guys really know, them top guys in points, them top four, they're not choking up. You know, they're not going to, like, all say, man, I'm going to lay up, I'm going to fish for largemouth, I'm going to try to get a top 20. Because realistically, a top 20 is not going to win any one of those guys AOI. Somebody in that group of four is probably going to have a top 5. So essentially, every one of them guys needs a fish to win.
The only thing that's got me thinking about that is this is obviously off the cuff, but man, if there's a strategist in the top four, it is your roomie, Mr. Wheeler. Dude.
Gosh,
he always comes out with some crazy strategies that tend to really highlight his ability to break down a fishery, maybe shake it up, maybe some smallmouth, maybe some largemouth. If you know, especially if you think that's going to play, it's going to be a fun event to watch just because of what you've released here on Bass Edge. So appreciate you sharing that. It should be pretty cool, man. We're going to take a quick breather. In a moment, we got to thank Bass Pro Shops as the presenting partner of this feature angler spotlight segment of Bass Edge Radio. Bass Pro Shops reminding you that we all live downstream. We're going to be right back with more from Adrian Vina after this short break.
Come on, man, let's roll!
What the?
To catch the fish, you need to be one with the fish.
With PowerPole shallow water anchors, you'll get the ultimate in precision, power, and control, so you can catch more fish. No face paint or phony fins necessary.
Excessive shock and vibration are two leading causes for premature battery failure. Prolong the life of your batteries with the new MegaWare Battery Guard. The Battery Guard sits under your battery and absorbs excessive vibration and bounce, reducing G-Shock by up to 80%. Great for boats or anywhere shock and vibration can damage a battery. The Battery Guard can easily be trimmed to fit virtually any custom shape or battery size. Save money by protecting your batteries. Spend more time on the water and less on maintenance. Find yours at MegaWare.com.
Here we go. Welcome back to more Bass Ed with MLF Bass Pro Tour champion from Cayuga Lake, Mr. Adrian Avina, in our featured angler spotlight. Adrian, you talked a little bit about it before in the closing segment there of the first part of the show. Post-spawn smallmouth tactics. You made the knockout round there at St. Clair. Had to be a pretty interesting transition for all of you anglers going from Cayuga, primarily sight fishing, cruising over to St. Clair, a lot of offshore fishing. Man, you were able to transition well. You made the knockout round now. As we mentioned, you're currently seventh in AOI. Angling techniques that enabled you to have a solid fishing finish over there in Michigan, break it down for us.
Yeah, I mean, so for those that didn't follow that event, so that particular tournament was actually another weird one, man. So we weren't allowed to fish to make a cast in Canada during practice. So, you know, we roll up to this body of water, and it's a place
Let me precurse that real quick. That was just because Canadian waters were not open.
Not open yet. Yep.
Right. It wasn't an MLF decision. Was just the Canadian waters were not open. They do not open for smallmouth bass fishing until the first Saturday in July.
So we go by, you know, whatever the laws are, right? So basically we roll up and it's another big body of water, right? We have Lake St. Clair, we have the St. Clair River, we've got the Detroit River, we've got Michigan waters Michigan? I mean, we just have a lot of water, right? A lot of water to fish.
Yeah, I think you had Michigan, Ohio was open. So, I mean, that you're just not Canada, yes.
Dude, so, like, it was a ton, right? So, from my experience, a lot of bass tournaments, a lot of smallmouth tournaments on that body of water get one on the Canadian side of Lake St. Clair. So what we were actually allowed to do in practice is we were allowed to be in Canada. We just couldn't have any rods on deck. We weren't allowed to make any cast. So I really, you know, after winning a tournament, I'm like, man, you know what? I'm just going to get ahead. Here we go again. I'm going to roll the dice, right? So I spent the majority of my practice in Canada, and I was just panning around with active target. You know, I would just get ahead. I'd throw my trolling motor down. I pan around for, you know, a quarter mile, half a mile. I pick up, I run to another area. The one thing that I've, you know, realized with St. Clair is it's hard to figure out, right? Because it's a real flat body of water. It's essentially featureless. You know, you're not fishing rock piles. You're literally just fishing these vast areas. But what I've realized is, you know, pretty quick when you throw your trolling motor down, whether or not the area is a good area or not, you know, cause like what I've noticed is like the smallmouth will mix in with what I consider the trash fish, right? Your drum, your walleye. So for me, that's what I did I spent 2 days of doing nothing but panning around, hoping that the stuff I was seeing was smallmouth. But what happened
doing a little
to me,
bit more than hoping you,
yeah.
You know, the great thing about this forward-facing sonar, an expert like yourself, you can pick out, you know, or have a pretty good idea if those, you know, there's a significant amount of smallmouth in an area.
Yeah.
Whereas some of those trash fish, they just don't move quite as much. No, yeah. Smallmouth do a lot more darting, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the one thing for you guys that are kind of trying to figure out, you know, like I've had a lot of questions over the last couple of years, and like, how do you distinguish, you know, one thing over another thing? Well, me personally, you know, I use Lowrance graphs, right? So on active target, the trash fish are actually fainter. You know, like I'm talking about your drums, your walleyes, They are fainter. They're not as bright. The smallmouth on active target, they show up as being brighter, like returns. And then also, you're not seeing their tail as much. You know, you start seeing a tail, you're like, oh, man, that's like a big drum. However, some of them 4 and 5 pound smallmouths, you can see their tail, so you got to be careful. But what happened to me is I caught a lot of bass in that tournament. Like, I mean, I caught 40 or 50 bass every single day. I just wasn't around the quality that, say, Jordan was. You know, Jordan won that tournament. He won it in Canada, doing pretty much exactly what I was doing. He just found a zone where them bigger fish were. And hats off to him, because he rolled the dice too, and it worked to his favor.
Yeah, it was cool to see. So in that post-spawn scenario, which, you know, moving into kind of the midsummer scenario, you started to see more of those fish relate to some current, get in that kind of mid-depthy zone. What, you know, everybody hears about the drop shot. What are some other techniques that you like to utilize when you're targeting fish on your forward-facing sonar? Let's say you're fishing a lake that does have more features than St. Clair. Let's say like St. Lawrence River, you know, you're going to be going to Saginaw. It's got more features, right? More cover oriented, maybe some of it off limits now, but talk about what are your best techniques and how you like to target these post spawn and midsummer smallmouth.
Yeah, so I mean, for me, the number one thing when it comes down to it is where these fish are at in the water column. You know, I mean, naturally, you know, pre-forward-facing sonar, you know, we always thought, hey, you know, you roll up to a boulder, you know, that's where these bass live, which in reality, that's just a stopping point for these bass. You know, these bass are constantly, I mean, they've got tails, they're constantly swimming around, they're moving around. But for me, and then when it comes down to smallmouth fishing, if I don't have to catch a smallmouth on treble hooks, I won't. You know, I mean, there are some really good baits that are treble hook baits. But however, man, I mean, you know how crazy a smallmouth is. You know, your hookup ratio when it comes down to treble hook baits, like a jerk bait or a spy bait or something like that.
I'll chalk up the spy bait as one of the worst thrown baits in smallmouth bassing.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's to the point where I will very rarely ever even throw it anymore just because of that reason.
Yeah.
But for me, if I had to pick three baits, it's hard to beat a Ned style bait, like a Berkeley half head with a little general or some type of little worm on there. Of course the drop shot, but another really big player, and I didn't really show it much because I didn't have a camera on me, but Jesse Wiggins showed it and I did catch a lot of my fish on it, was just a marabou hair jig. You know, people naturally think you got to throw a marabou hair jig, you know, on a shallow flat, but that's not true. You can fish a marabou hair jig out deep. That particular week we had a mayfly hatch going on, and a marabou hair jig really resembles and mimics that really well.
Sure.
But for me, those would probably be the three baits. Another bait, you know, depending on where you're at in the country, I mean, when it comes down to smallmouth fishing, I would have to say that's in my top five 100% is a Carolina rig. You know, just old school ball and chain. But those would be three or four of my tops, you know, when it comes down to smallmouth fishing post-spawn.
Let's talk a little bit deeper into this. You got the Bassmaster Open kicking off later on this week. I think it's stop number 6 or 7 with that EQ field. They're moving up north, probably going to start seeing some shakeups and who's catching what out there. They got a 5-day practice for that particular event. So it's a lot of practice. They can break down a big fishery like this. They're going out of Waddington, New York. I believe the lake is off limits for this tournament. Similar to what the Toyota series is going to be doing in Messina, in the middle of August, the lake will be off limits for that tournament. Breaking down how you think this Bassmaster Open tournament is going to evolve this week. Fish, you know, probably less than 5% of fish still on beds there. The current keeps those fish cool. Maybe a few fish still on beds right now, but highly unlikely. There's a whole lot. How would you, Adrian, knowing that you have some great experience on that river, look and break down a practice for the Bassmaster Open this week?
Yeah, I mean, so if it were me, the one thing that's pretty wild about a smallmouth, and like I said, I mean, I fish for them quite a bit, and I fish that river a lot, is they'll be spawning. Say they'll be spawning 3 months ago, right, or 3 weeks ago. Say they're spawning all over the place. Them same back, that same wave of fish, 3 weeks later, can be out in 25 and 30 feet of water. That's how fast them bass move there. And me in particular, that's where I'd be fishing. You know, I'd be fishing between 25 to 35. You know, I think a lot of people on that river fish that river too shallow. I catch a lot of my bass out there deeper. And me personally, you know, this is the time that they're coming to you. You know, you always talk about that, you know, whether it be pre-spawn or post-spawn, you know, whether your fish are leaving or they're coming. You know, I talked to a couple guys that are up there and water temperatures are already in the mid 70s. I would be fishing out there deep and you know, just drifting them current seams and finding maybe an eddy or two that's got some bass in it. I think the tournament's going to get one closer to the lake. Okay. I think anybody,
nothing super secret there, but we've seen that in the past.
Yeah.
I think that's because there's just a better quality of fish in that zone. I mean, really, I think you got three zones. You got that Ogdensburg zone, you got that Brockville to Chippewa zone, and then you kind of got that Clayton zone. It seems like always that Clayton zone's got the bigs. If you got the right weather and they fire, you better be there. Other than that, you got those other two zones, which are, I think, fairly closely matched, although in the last 2 years, Ogdensburg area has been a little bit better than that Chippewa Brockville zone.
Yeah.
Where would you spend, you know, are you going to spend all your time in that Clayton area?
So me, if it were me, that Ogdensburg area is a really good area. It's one of them deals where, you know, I think it was an elite event. There was an elite event where I think it was Josh Bertrand won. I think I think Justin Lucas finished second.
Yes.
And then that zone. And then the following tournament Bass had, I think Micah Fraser won in that zone. That's a really, really good zone. But me personally, I like getting down there towards the lake. You know, I've always been one of them guys that really likes to try to make them long runs, you know, like a lot like Brandon. You know, Brandon's another one of them guys that really likes to try to get away from the field and make them long runs. I think once you get down there, the system fishes a little bit different. They don't relate to the current as much. There are some like isolated places, rock veins, rock piles, that type of stuff that I like to fish down that way.
You can spread out also more down there too. It's a much bigger river.
It is, you know, it's it starts widening up a little bit. You don't have as much flow. And the thing about that system though, man, is gosh dang, dude, you can catch 22 pounds anywhere. You know, you really can. It's just, you know, in order to catch that 25 pound bags, I really think you got to be from Clayton to the lake.
Yeah. Yeah. Our mutual friend Jody White just won an ABA there this past week.
Yeah. I seen he had 27. Pounds.
28. That was awesome to see. So what is it about the current? You mentioned current a lot of times. You mentioned eddies. So do those fish, are you going to look on the forward-facing side? Are you going to look in the backside of these humps in those current areas? Where do you feel like the better quality of fish position on that fishery?
Yeah, so, I mean, I personally like hard-hitting stuff for smallmouth. That's me.
Just for guys that don't know hard hitting, he means the stuff that's the face of the current, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, right? Like, and again, we're talking about different species of bass, but smallmouth are just such an aggressive bass that the front side is where all the bait's going to be. And yeah. Okay. You guys talk about what happens when it hits the hill and it just washes over and the bass are sitting out there in that slack current waiting for it to come. Smallmouth ain't waiting for nothing, man. They're aggressive.
Especially when you got that many in one fish.
Oh, facts, man. Facts. And I think like for me, so there's two different ways really to fish that system, right? You can either drift it or you can spot lock, you know, in an area that may not be as hard of current, and you can cast and like kind of like almost like trout fish your bait back, you know, where you can just kind of wash it. A lot of guys do it up in, you know, below the dams and stuff, where you just kind of wash your bait with the current. And those are really the two methods that I'll do. You know, you will see some guys that will just drift that river, you know, out there in the middle of the channel. Like, that's another popular thing. I don't think that's going to be a big player. That's going to be a little bit later on in the year, you know, when you're starting to get into mid August and September, that's when them channels really start firing. But I think a guy that can find, you know, some groups of bass, or maybe just a zone of that river, and it's going to be between probably 22 to 30 feet, I think that's where it's going to get one. Now, where that's going to be, I have no idea.
Yeah. Who knows? The cool thing about this is, obviously, we're just talking figuratively about St. Lawrence River right now and the Bass Open. But you take the same pattern to Lake St. Clair. You got that huge delta where the Detroit River is flowing into Lake St. Clair. You got the same scenario when it goes from the St. Clair River flowing into Lake St. Clair. And then you got the Detroit River flowing into Lake Erie. You really got those same styles and same effects of that current and how it positions, and you can utilize it to generate bites. I'll even take it down. We've all seen the Kurt Mitchell slugfest that went on a couple years ago at the title championship there on the lake that you're going to be going to there at Saginaw. And same style of situations, you know, current can play a role all over the place. We see it even down at Pickwick, you know, the southern smallmouth fisheries. So anglers can utilize the information that you're hearing from Adrian all over the country. I just wanted to make that super clear that this isn't no St. Lawrence show. This is a smallmouth show with information on how guys can take advantage of Adrian's experience. And let's talk a little bit more about forward-facing sonar. You brought it up, Adrian, there, and your practice for St. Clair. You drop the troller, look around quarter, half-mile zones. I mean, what is it that you're looking for before you drop the troller to, you know, have a high percentage area where you can find some quality smallmouth? Secondarily, you know, how far is too far? When do you drop the troller, and what speed do you like to roll it on? When you're fanning your trolling motor, how are you working this process so you can dial this in for some anglers that want to get better with their forward-facing sonar?
Yeah, I mean, so there's two different scenarios, right? There's you know, I live in New Jersey. New Jersey, we got a lot of small lakes. So essentially, I can go dump in any lake in South Jersey and literally throw my trolling motor down and pan the whole lake, right? And there's a lot of bodies of water around the country that you can literally do that, right? But on the bodies of water that you don't have that luxury, you know, the places like, you know, like the Great Lakes or the Finger Lakes or, you know, some of these bigger bodies of water where you need to actually figure out kind of where you need to start using your forward facing sonar. But one thing that I really like doing, and I'm sure you do it as well, Kurt, but it kind of gets overlooked from a lot of the weekend anglers or really the people that are just getting into it. I really like to run around at 25 miles an hour, watching my 2D, and I really like just watching the bottom, you know. And what I mean by watching the bottom is you'll run through an area, and this isn't just St. Clair. This can be on Lake Erie. It could be on anywhere, but you can see the bottom a lot better. And this is going to sound funny. You can see the bottom a lot better at 25 miles an hour than you can on your trolling motor, That right there, I learned that about 10 or 12 years ago. And that tip right there allowed me to be able to figure out these bodies of water throughout the country so much better, so much faster, so much more efficiently. Now you throw forward facing sonar and I'm just like way ahead of the curve, right? So
covering water so much faster, so much more effectively.
Yeah. So basically what I'm looking for is essentially spikes, right? So I'm running around at 25 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden, say I start seeing a bunch of little spikes that are coming, you know, 4 or 5 feet off the bottom. Now, if they're real short, a lot of times that's going to be either one or two things. Either it's going to be brush, it's going to be a boulder, or it's going to be grass. You know, if it's more gradual, like more like a mountain or like a hill, a lot of times that could be a rock vein, that could be just like an unmarked high spot. And depending on where you're at in the country, these all could be good things. So for me, what I was looking for on St. Clair is I was actually looking for sand, flat sand bottom, so nothing, and then just isolated clumps of grass. And once I started finding that, I could figure out where the edges were by literally just kind of doing figure eights all through the area, gridding the area at 25 miles an hour. Then once I did that, I would get ahead and come off pad, drop my trolling motor, and pan those areas that I had marked. But that's my biggest tip for you guys. Get ahead and throw your trolling motor, run around at 25 miles an hour, and mark some good stuff.
Yeah, great tip right there. It would take a long time to cover St. Clair on your trolling motor.
Oh, dude.
All right, man. Lastly, before I let you go, want to bring this into the realm. Feel like you always have to, man. You got a house. Jacob Wheeler, Dustin Connell, Mark Daniels Jr., man, a dominant force on the BBT. Obviously, Mark went through going through a little period, but it looks like he's climbing out of that little struggle period. All anglers go through it, and it kind of hit him hard. Kind of hit him there pretty hard. But I felt like the more he talked about it in public is when he really started, you know, like having that intervention to get out of it. Right. Like internally, it was killing him for a few events, but he started talking about it in public and it really helped him come out. What is the winning formula that makes the house successful? Obviously, there's rules in MLF that you can share some, you can't share some after event, you can share everything. But between Jacob, yourself now, a BBT champion, Connell, his year last year was ridiculous. Three trophies. MDJ, just a solid performer at all time. Give me some dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, so for one, okay, people ask me all the time because I've got a lot of saltwater friends too, you know, and I'm over here on the boat all the time, and these guys are like, "Oh man, Adrian, congratulations!" And you know, I see you won a tournament, this and that, and we start talking, right. And they're like, "Yeah, man, you know, it's just a matter of time, you know, you got lucky." But the thing is, these guys, a lot of times, you know, I get, cause I'm like best friends with Jacob, right? Jacob was in my wedding, you know, Mark and DC, they're both, you know, they're both at my wedding.
Sure.
These guys here, what people don't realize, not only are they really hard workers, cause there's a lot of really good hard workers out there that try, you know, it for a couple of years and end up either getting kicked out or just don't perform. And they got to go back to their normal, you know, 9-to-5 job.
Yep.
These guys, so not only the hard workers, but these guys here, they are unbelievably smart. And you're wondering, like, okay, what's smarts, right? Why is, you know, being smart, you know, so good for bass fishing? Because, yeah, there might be a whole lot of luck involved or whatever. But, like, a prime example, right? Jacob can literally see a photo, right? Like, say it's a bank, a shoreline, and it could be, like, one dock on that shoreline. And Jacob can tell you what lake that was from. Like that blows my mind. Like he has such a good memory and just his way of breaking down bodies of water. I mean, the guy's in a really good network, of course. We talk about everything. We share a lot of patterns. We share all the new latest and greatest, you know, techniques that we learn. But these guys are just really, really smart. Yeah. And they make good decisions.
That's super cool, man. Super cool. It's fun to watch how, and you see this throughout bass fishing. A lot of people in the fan perspective don't really see it because they don't know the inner workings of houses. And you'll see houses like go off, you know, like these couple guys that are buddies, they run on a big run. And y'all's run has been like one I haven't seen. Obviously it's neat to see and fun to watch. And it was great to see you, get that W. I'm sure MDJ is next. It's going to be fun to see when he gets his. So congratulations to all you guys. And the neatest thing about this is, so how many houses have you seen broke up throughout the years because of egos?
Oh, a lot. And I'm not going to lie. You know, it's not all rainbows at our house. You know,
not all roses, right? No,
hey, we all have YouTube channels, right? We dive into these stupid games and contests and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, dude, some of them get heated, you know, for those that haven't watched them, but, we work really well. You know, I mean, it just so happens that, you know, we're four guys that, yeah, we're competitors, but we're good. You know, we're all good people. We're all really good friends. And talking about Mark a little bit, you know, I think I'm not going to credit, you know, myself or Jacob or DC, but whenever you're in a rut and you're surrounded by a group of guys that's constantly motivating you and trying to inspire you and trying to give you good advice, you know, it does, it helps you. Sure. And this goes for anyone, you know, like you want to surround yourself with good people. Right. And Mark had a really rough start, but if you look at the AOI standings right now, like he finished near the bottom, like two or three tournaments. Mark is one top 20 away from making Red Crest. Yeah. Like he turned the season around drastically. He's had a couple of really, really good events. And I mean, realistically, he's only one more good tournament away. So we're always rooting for one another. You know, if I don't win a tournament, I want one of them guys to win. And you know, that just says a lot. And I can honestly say all three of the other guys feel the same way. You know, it's probably good we don't have 20 tournaments, because I feel like if we had 20 tournaments, there may be some breakups at the house. But you know, 8 or 9 weeks out of the year with some of your buddies, man, it's a fun time.
Everybody can handle it. Well, it's a tribute to all you guys, tribute to you. I think, you know, 9 out of 10 houses would have busted up. They would have never lasted as long as y'all have and continue to last. So hats off to all you guys. It shows what kind of personalities you are and what kind of individuals you are as well. But hey, man, Adrian, awesome to have you back again after 9 years.
Let's not do that again, man.
We got you back on Bass Edge. Man, any final thoughts for the listening audience? Maybe shout out your YouTube channel. Let them know what's going on there. And just maybe any words of wisdom you can leave us here with Bass Edge Radio.
Yeah, man, I think the biggest thing is, you know, when it comes down to fishing, you know, I mean, anybody out here watching, I mean, if you have any questions, feel free to give me a holler. I know we try to answer as much as we can, or try to really answer all the questions we've got on social. But I mean, if you want to shoot me a personal message on any of my platforms, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, feel free to holler. And Kurt, I'm just glad to be back here talking to you. And hopefully it won't be 9 years. Hopefully we'll have another one of these soon. But man, I appreciate the time with you guys, and hopefully I'll be back.
Heck yeah, man. Well, we appreciate you taking time again to be here with us on Bass Edge Radio. And don't go away. Adrian, thanks again. You can go away, but don't everybody else go away. We're going to come back with my closing thoughts and kind of review the show and see what's coming up in the bassin' world over the second half of July. Y'all stay tuned. Bass Edge Radio will return in a second.
Thanks, guys.
Nitro, a rush of tournament adrenaline. Nitro, the choice of champions, where performance meets play. Nitro, a big water beast, a pure fishing machine. Nitro, release the champion within.
Nobody wants to run out of power when they're on the water. There is a better way. Introducing the Charge Marine Power Management Station from PowerPole that does the work of three devices, a traditional battery charger, a charge on the run, and an emergency start system. PowerPole Charge.
All right, welcome back to the show. Closing out episode number 404, the late July edition of Bass Edge Radio. Man, what a great interview we had with Adrian Avina, MLF Bass Pro Tour champion from Cayuga Lake, and certainly going to be a 2024 Red Crest qualifier. See how he snaps them up, them smallmouth over at Saginaw Bay for the stop number 7. Starts actually right when we begin the next episode, so we probably won't be able to get to talk about that until that August 15 episode, but there is lots of events coming up here in the near future. We highlighted some of them in our talk with Adrian, but the Bassmaster opens up on the St. Lawrence River July 20th through 22nd, so that's going to kick off later on this week. You got the MLF Invitationals kicking off on the Mississippi River. That is stop number 6. Their last stop in the Invitationals. You're going to see, I believe it's 8 anglers qualify to fish against Adrian on the Bass Pro Tour in 2020. Out of that AOI standings, our previous guest, Nick Hatfield, right in the mix for that. So it'll be interesting to see how that runs. Also a great Bass Edge friend, Gray Buck, on the cusp of making that Bass Pro Tour as well. So watching that final stop, that Invitationals event on the Mississippi, July 25th through July 27th. And then the Elite Series back in action after a pretty long break. But they're going to be back in action July 27th through the 30th there on St. Clair. So we'll be able to talk about that in depth in our August 1 episode that will be coming up here in a couple weeks. Man, again, let's take a little moment to highlight some things from Adrian. Probably one of the most interesting things Adrian talked about is the utilization of his 2D sonar. Obviously, he's looking at maps and his electronics to find areas to run low speeds. You know, he's talked about 20, 25 mile an hour to find key areas on lakes that don't have a lot of structure, particularly St. Clair he's talking about. But you can utilize this through any body of water, particularly looking for deep water bass and haunts, you know, just looking for those little rises and cusps in that 2D sonar before he drops the trolling motor. So he's looking for high percentage areas with that 2D running around on the big motor before he drops the trolling motor to really start looking at that forward-facing sonar, covering up to a quarter to a half a mile of water with that thing. That I felt like was pretty interesting. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a quarter mile straight line or a half mile straight line, but man, he's on that trolling motor working that forward facing sonar a significant amount, covering a lot of distance, really looking for those fish. Partially in that situation because Canadian waters were off limits, so he couldn't fish. I'm sure he'd be making a few casts here and there between, but just interesting to hear how he's utilizing that forward facing sonar. Also interesting to hear some of Adrian's view on the MLF event there at Cayuga after so many, comments, likes and dislikes, it seems like you always hear more of the bad comments, but interesting to see and understand his position and his path to victory in that event. And now that MLF sees some of the nuances with smallmouth bass fishing, bed fishing with a 5 bass catchway release format, making a few changes so that scenario can be improved in their tournament organization. But man, nonetheless, huge shout out to Adrian, looking at like 105 pounds of bass over 4 days there at Lake Cayuga. But Adrian bringing the bass and education with this episode, the mid-July edition. Be sure to tune back with us right here on Bass Edge, April the 1st. We're going to be back here in Pennsylvania, coming to you from the cabin. That's where we're at. We're in the western hills of Pennsylvania at the cabin, so it's great to be here. My wife would call it the cottage, so sorry. Cottage, cabin. Kind of the same, but anyway, we're going to be back here in PA. We're going to be headed off to Thousand Islands to fish the Toyota event in early August. So that should be a lot of fun as well. And last but not least, stay with us here through all these dog days of summer. We're going to be bringing you more Bass Edge knowledge. Be sure you go check out all those new products that were launched at ICAST. Should be interested in those. Other than that, man, that's going to wrap this show. Adios from us here at Bass Edge Radio. We'll see you next time, August 15th.